Revelation. God has revealed himself through many means, including the conscience. God has given each person a conscience so that they can understand his moral standard and their failure to keep that standard. While the conscience can be deadened and twisted by sin, every human being has an innate knowledge of God's law.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Want to geek out? Of course you do. This is Wretched Radio. If you are a theology geek, if you love the local church, you are going to love a conference that is going to be held mid-August in Fargo, North Dakota. Just, you don't need to worry about not being able to see the church when you're trying to drive to get to the church in Fargo, because there's no hills to obstruct your view. Once you see it, you just drive toward the church. It's the 3535foundation.com. That's the website where you can learn more about the aforementioned conference, 3535foundation.com. You're wondering, 3535? Where? Who names a foundation? Is that a Bible reference? Is that from Isaiah or something like that? There's 35 chapters in Isaiah. No, that's the street address of the church. 3535. Fun. So you won't get lost. You can't get lost in North Dakota. I'm just telling you. You can't get lost. You have no excuse. And if you want to geek out on ecclesiology because you love the local church, I'm going to be there. Would encourage you to join me as we sit and learn and study 17th century ecclesiology. Why? Because ecclesiology, it was the big conversation in the late 1600s, courtesy of one Henry VIII, he was, who decided, well, the Catholic Church won't annul this. I guess I'll be the head of a new church. And it caused the church to ask some questions. Oh, who is the authority? What is the power of the church? And the subject was hotly contested. It was ultimately, at least for some people, codified and solidified in something we call the 1689 London Baptist Confession. The ecclesiology, mega deal. Why would you want to go to a conference like that? So you can perhaps think about the church in ways that historically we've thought about the church. Now, you might not agree with all of the conclusion of all of the forefathers that studied this issue. Ecclesiology is a big subject. I mean, it is a big subject. And these guys, they took the time to think it through, and they was smarterer than we are. And you're going to hear lectures that talk about how those great minds work through the subject of the local church. And we need more teaching and focusing on the local. We need it. As the world gets darker, this is not a retreat model. I think Rod Dreher would say, you got to escape. You got to get away. Move someplace. No, we don't have to head to the hills, but we should be in a local church so that we've got a family, so that we've got support, so that we've got help, so that we can encourage one another, because that's God's design, not because it's like the safe response to a darkening culture. No, God wants us in local churches, serving joyfully, using the gift or gifts that he has given to each of us as born-again believers. That's what he wants, and maybe the darkening of our world is turning our attention toward the local church. I hope it is. So if you want to geek out in Fargo, North Dakota, I was just letting you write your own joke right there. 3535foundation.com, 3535foundation.com. Watch this, Jimmy.
Okay.
The lectures will be delivered by manly men with beards. I needed a segue. All right. we had to get there somehow. And beards. Speaking of beards, I know this guy had a huge beard. And he went and got himself a new beard trimmer, and he thought that the number that his barber used on the top of his head would be the same number for the trimmer on his beard. Right through the beard in it.
What a dummy.
Oh, this is so awkward. I'm talking about you. I forgot. You're the source of this tale. What happened to your majestic beard?
Yeah, I learned a hard lesson. I did.
Check the number.
Well, I knew the number.
I just do the whole thing.
Yeah. Right straight through the middle.
Okay. It's not as bad as when I took Jack to get his first haircut. Mrs. Friel said, whatever you do, don't come back with that hair buzzed. He's sitting in my lap. I tell the barber what to, you know, how to do it. He took a number one. You used a three on your beard. At least he got something left.
Yeah.
And don't worry, it'll grow back in an hour on you. He took a number one right through the center of his hair like a big skunk cut.
Scalp.
And I knew immediately, there ain't no saving this. Wow, that drive home. And the greeting I received was, well, let's just say it was memorable. Beards do not make a man a man. You can take the grisliest beard and put it on a sissy boy, and he doesn't suddenly become a man. A beard is an external manifestation of only something that men can do, but that is not what defines masculinity. Although, there are some people who kind of suggest, if you're going to be a man, you have to have a beard. I was reading a celebratory article about J.D. Vance. He's got a beard! He's got a beard! That's what men should be wearing. And it was from like a really conservative Christian site. The celebration that we finally got a VP candidate who's growing a beard. And as long as I brought up the subject of J.D. Vance, have you tracked his religious conversions? I think it's worth noting, none of us knows the future, but it has been my experience that when you track a man who has moved pretty dramatically regularly, you're not dealing with a settled man. I'm not making any sort of political prognostication. But if I were, I would say just be prepared to be surprised that maybe J.D. Vance doesn't stay in the same place that he is today, because he's been moving a lot on a lot of issues. For instance, 2016, you know, he was very anti-Trump. Now he's very pro-Trump. 2016, very pro-life. Now he's not pro-life. You say, well, yeah, he is. No, he's not. He supported the Supreme Court decision that women should have the right to buy abortion pills. That means you're not pro-life anymore. You support that. Over 60% of abortions happen through that pill. He supports that. You're not pro-life. He used to be. But it's his religion that I think could be an indicator that this is a man who hasn't settled yet. Do you remember Hank Hanegraaff's conversion to Eastern Orthodoxy? A bunch of us were surprised. It's like, well, hey, what? You can't be the Bible answer, man, if you're Eastern Orthodox. You got to be the Bible and tradition, man. And so we decided, we went and looked into Hank Hanegraaff's past, specifically regarding religion. He's had many conversions. I can't remember. It's been too many years now. But as I recall, he started out with, let's just say, Roman Catholic. He became Lutheran, became Evangelical, Baptist, then he was Reformed, then he's Eastern Orthodox, something like where it's like, wow, that's a lot of changes, which indicates Hank might not be done. And that's true of J.D. Vance. That J.D. Vance, he started out as growing up in a Christian home. That's all he described it. He became a raging atheist. He went off to university and was an atheist there until he met a Catholic philosopher. He became an evangelical, and in 2019, he's converted to being a Roman Catholic. This isn't something you can take to the bank. But I would say don't be shocked if you don't see consistency coming out of the vice presidential pick who has a beard. Ha! If you didn't think I was going to get back to it, let's talk about masculinity and what it means to be a man. It ain't your beard. It ain't how much you can bench press. It ain't how much you earn. It isn't how many times you hit the bullseye when throwing darts or shooting a gun. Although that's probably closer to being masculine. The point is, those are expressions of masculinity. What makes a man a man? Let's go back to the assassination attempt, shall we? There's a man who really should be receiving more attention. Corey Comparatore. He's the 50-year-old fire chief who went to the rally with his wife and daughter. As soon as he heard gunshots, he put him on the ground, covered him up, and he took the bullet for them. That's a man. That's a man. I think it was C.S. Lewis, one of those guys in the mid-20th century, who talked about men with hollow chests, shrunken chests, becoming weak and sissified. Look, it's not about how much you can bench press. It's about your willingness to play the man, to do manly things, to have your emotions in check like a man, to have your strength under control like a man, and to be willing to take a bullet for your loved ones like a man. And I think Corey is a good cause for all of us to consider, is it possible that I have been influenced more than I think by the feminist culture that tells us that anything manly is toxic? And I would ask myself the question, and I would encourage you to do the same, sir. You ready to take a bullet for your family? Maybe more importantly, and even more manly, not are you willing to die for your family? Here's the harder question. Are you willing to live for your family? That is true masculinity. This is Wretched Radio. Preborn Ministries, pro-life ministry, rescuing babies. The war, let me tell you, it's raging out there, and Preborn is right on the front lines providing what is so powerful, ultrasounds. When a woman sees her baby 80% of the time, it's a no-brainer. That's my child. That's a baby in there, not a blob of tissue. Worldview is getting pumped into everybody through Hollywood, social media, the internet, universities, businesses, and government. If you'd be kind enough to consider supporting Preborn Ministries, that would be groovy. Lives are saved. Women, men, hear the gospel. Please consider supporting this network of clinics that is doing such great work. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
All right, Christian, are you, like most of us, concerned about the direction our culture is headed? Yeah, well, listen up, because we are about to launch a brand new initiative within this ministry. We're bringing together 8 brilliant Christian thinkers to create content that tackles today's toughest issues head on. Think of it like a Christian version of the Daily Wire. These experts will be producing articles, podcasts, videos, and even homeschool curriculum. They'll cover everything from ethics and evangelism to science and Gen Z issues. It's all about equipping you to navigate our complex and ever-changing brave new world with biblical wisdom. But here's the thing. We need your support in order to make this happen. We're currently in the middle of a match campaign, a $250,000 match campaign, where every dollar you're able to give will be doubled. If you want to learn more about this initiative and the incredible minds behind it, just visit wretched.org/fellows right now. That's wretched.org/fellows.
You're familiar with Tomorrow Clubs. It's a ministry that we have happily lauded over the years. We commend them heartily to you because they are an efficient ministry. They've got the gospel right, and they go to places where the gospel is usually not propagated. Very poor parts of the globe, specifically Eastern Europe, and in parts of Africa, the Tomorrow Clubs, working in conjunction with a local church to preach the gospel to the kids, sing, have them memorize scripture, pray, and entire towns are getting saved. We love the Tomorrow Clubs, and if you want to be encouraged and be reminded that Jesus is building his church, they just reached 1,000 of these clubs. That's encouraging, and I'd like to encourage you to please consider become a ministry partner to the Tomorrow Clubs. If you like evangelistic ministries, they're the ticket. They're the bomb. You can learn more at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Hermeneutics. The Bible is not a manual. While it should be read literally, the books fit into a variety of genres, including narrative, poetry, prophecy, and epistle. How we understand and apply scripture begins with identifying what genre we are reading. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not one, but two visitors are expected to darken the doorstep of Wretched Radio World. This is Wretched Radio. If you are in Atlanta Friday night and you would like to understand the history of mental health, it's a short history, a surprisingly short history, and what the implications are of understanding how the secular psychologists view human beings, specifically the distinction between the mind and the brain, and what the Bible has to say about that subject, and the implications when your child or you are given some sort of mental health diagnosis and the accompanying prescription. You'll want to join us in the Wretched Studio Friday night, Saturday morning. You can come to one session or both. Dr. Greg Gifford is going to be lecturing on that distinction to help us understand mental health and what to do if you're told your child needs to take a pill. It is going to be so helpful. And incidentally, it is based on his book that he is writing. It's not going to be out until first quarter, I believe, next year. I think it might rock a lot of boats. It might make a lot of inroads, and it might reveal to people, yikes, I've been looking for help in all the wrong places, and maybe, just maybe, the Bible has better answers for my mental health issues. You can register. It's totally free. Wretched.org/mental health. Wretched.org/mental health. And guess who else I've been told is coming to town, Jimmy?
Who's that?
Max.
Max.
From Tomorrow Clubs.
Oh, really?
Max from Ukraine, Tomorrow Clubs. Wow, I bet I've known him for 20 years now. Zoinks, Scoob. Tomorrow Clubs, great, great ministry. If you like to see kids get saved and local churches revitalized, specifically in Eastern Europe and in Africa, encourage you, support the Tomorrow Clubs. If you can, support the Tomorrow Clubs at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. It's kids meeting camps every week. And it's $1 per child per month. But they can't be doing anything for $1. You can in Eastern Europe and Africa. This is a volunteer-driven ministry, which is why it's so efficient, led by Paul and Cindy Marty, known those kids for years. Heartily commend them to you to consider supporting, because churches are getting strengthened in Eastern Ukraine. There are more good churches in Ukraine than you think. The war hasn't been very helpful. Nevertheless, there are thousands of good churches in Ukraine. And if you'd like to see thousands more, encourage you to consider tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. And Max should be joining us, I'm hoping, in studio. We get to hear stories of what it's like living in Eastern Europe and what these clubs do. The stories are amazing. Okay, there was some village, I can't pronounce it. There was somebody who grew up in the gangs in this little town, ended up going to a Tomorrow Club, I think just because he heard there were cookies. Get saved. What is he doing today? He ain't a thug. He's leading a Tomorrow Club. It's a come on. You can't write those stories. Amazing. Tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. And as long as I'm promoting stuff, got to tell you, I laughed out loud when I received an email from us. You say, wow, that's pretty flattering of self. I opened up my email because it said that Wretched is having a global warming sale. And the little meme that somebody across the hall created, who I know quite well, it said this sale is so hot that the Mormons are telemarketing. That's funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
Funnier than a dad joke.
Hey. I'll
tell you that much,
hey,
right
wait
now.
Wait a minute.
Hey, wait a minute. What you talking about, Willis? Received an email that I think might be of particular interest to you if you work in the, what we will call the secular world, although for the Christian, there's no distinction between sacred and secular. Everything is under the divine authority of the Lord Jesus Christ. Your vocation is as godly as a pastor's vocation. If you are serving God, making widgets, that is fully pleasing to the Lord. You do not have to do church work for it to be sacred. Your work is dedicated to the Lord. You are doing it unto Him, whether you eat, drink, or go to work in a secular organization. You are doing it unto the Lord. But if you work outside of the church, chances are pretty good you're going to be called into, a DEI meeting. What is a Christian to do? This is a new subject. This is a brave new world issue that needs some addressing, that needs some thinking. You know what? We're going to have to talk to Andrew Walker about this, get his take on it. I think of Andrew Walker. He's the ethics prophet, Southern Sem. He's going to be a fellow here at the ministry, and he teaches on ethics, issues exactly like this. And I think that he and Al Mohler have been co-authoring articles for the Washington Post lately. That ain't a bad thing, is it? And I'd like to ask him the question, hey, what do you say to the Christian who goes to work and they're told DEI? By the way, his contribution is going to be called Brave New World, because we're living in one. So the encouragement, the offerings that I will set before you now are just that, because these are such new issues. I think I'm sort of sorting this out, right? But you can correct me. Send an email to idea@wretched.org, because I received this email and I've been giving it some thought, because so many Christians are now being confronted with what to do when you receive the dreaded email that says your presence is demanded at this time because we're going to DEI you. What is a Christian to do? Number one, do I think a Christian can attend a DEI lecture without affirming it? Yes, I do. Because you're commanded to go by your employer, and you're just going to go and listen. The tricky part is not doing anything to indicate affirmation or agreement. Regarding pronoun usage is kind of the biggie, affirming what somebody thinks that they are versus what they actually are. You've got to be really careful to not cross that line. Presence is one thing in this context. I think, by the way, the context really is worth considering. Going to something that is really bad at work because you're commanded to, as long as it's not participating in it, I think is different than, say, going to a religious ceremony where they are doing something overtly sinful. I don't think a Christian should be doing that, because it is about religion, and your presence gives affirmation to what's happening up there on the altar or on the platform. I think the work context is different. So, my opinion, I think you can go to it, but you got to be careful that you don't do things that affirm it. So, what would that look like? I'm not sure. There might not be a distinction between oral and verbal responses and written responses. There might be. Nevertheless, consider the high school student who goes to a public school. They're being taught in science class and geography and math, because they bring it into every single subject, that the world is 4.2 billion years. Maybe we're more than that now. They just keep needing more time to make that little theory stay alive. But by the way, I got to tell you, the evolutionary theory, it's needing the paddles because it's dying. Nevertheless, the kid is being taught it's 4.2 billion years old. And he, of course, affirms what Ken Ham says, because you should. It's 6,000 years old. Is it a sin for the kid to answer the test with the information that is being taught and downloaded? Well, ideally, if you can write, if it's multiple choice, that's a different deal. But if you can write down, the textbook says 4.2 billion years, you've given them the information that you've been taught without affirming the information. I think that's ideal if you can do that. Do I think it would be a sin for a kid to check the box that says 4.2 billion years? I can understand why somebody would think that it is. I don't know that it would be considered a sin. Why? Because that's the agreement. You're teaching me, and I'm supposed to learn what you're saying, and I'm going to give you that information back. Let's go now to the workplace. You're called on to answer a question that would violate your Christian values. if you can say, well, what you just taught us is, or what that video just said is, I think you can get away with, because you're just you've prefaced it without affirming it. And I think you should do the same thing if asked to do in writing. But now what about the question of implementing it? The email that I received said, we're getting ready for the whole DEI business at our place, and they're going to be demanding that we use preferred pronouns. I don't see a way for a Christian to use somebody's incorrect pronoun and not be affirming it. I just don't see it. Okay, so you call yourself Sheila, but I know you're Steve. Probably not going to happen. I just don't see how a Christian can use pronouns without ever saying something corrective. If you can figure out a way to say something corrective, you say something corrective. But I think that would be the line that we just can't cross. Have a different opinion? Idea at wretched.org. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.